Dentistry is changing. Technology, education, and resources are closer to our fingertips now more than ever. Are you ready to learn what millennial dentists are doing to exceed patient expectations, enjoy dentistry more, and take more vacations? Or how this generation can join up with the previous ones to make for an unstoppable dental team? Well, wait no longer. Here are your hosts of The Millennial Dentist, Dr. Holsinger, Dr. Payray, and Dr. Sully Sullivan.
So this is our first ever car recording. Pretty exciting. Holsinger's driving, so he doesn't have a mic. We have two very special guests with us. Dr. Jeff Alford. Alford or Chevy. And a.k.a. Willie. We'll just call you Willie for the for the episode. And my good buddy, Dr. Alec Rice, out of Nashville with me. Say hey, guys.
Hello. What's going on, Millennial Dentist?
Alec, you're an orthodontist, and then...
Should we call this three specialists and a general?
Three specialists, one general.
That's the title of this podcast.
The pediatric dentist, an oral surgeon, and a...
A wire twister.
And myself. the jack of all trades, ace of none. Willie, why don't you kind of give us a little bit of your background and your story? Because, I'd like to hear how dentistry is done in Texas.
Well, it's always bigger. Everything in Texas is bigger. We know that.
Dentistry or the tools?
Everything.
Okay.
Each tool takes two hands.
Fantastic.
It's a pretty traditional practice. It's all just a regular oral surgery practice. We do trauma, DMJ surgery, jaw surgery. Like I said before, it's, you know, we're not the new teeth and titanium oral surgeon.
That does seem kind of like the thing to do that most people are wanting to do now. It's like, especially a lot of the new graduates, I feel like.
It's the least headache.
Yeah. Do you feel like a lot of that has to do with like the insurance and just the medical part of it and just the pain in the ass to do all that? Is that why when you say headache?
Oh, certainly.
Because I imagine that the surgery part's just as fun as the others, but it comes with a lot more liability and risk.
It does, yeah, but it keeps it interesting.
Is your office in a is like a standalone, or you part of like a hospital based, or how?
They're in buildings. They're not in a hospital. There's three of them.
They're buildings, huh?
Yeah,
that's good info. Right.
Brick and mortar.
All right.
Dying. Where's the stucco? I don't know.
So when did you graduate dental school?
2003.
Wow.
Yeah, I'm old.
You're definitely not a millennial.
No, I'm not. I'm sorry. Should I hang up?
We're bridging the gap right now. Bridge the gap.
Okay, so tell me about, I want to hear, give me your dental story. How did you get into dentistry? Why did you choose to do oral surgery? And let me hear about kind of your practice as it's grown and that sort of thing. I'm going to pop in and ask questions.
Do you want the long version or the short version?
The medium version.
The medium? Okay. Yeah. So,
but Alec, you got to pop in and ask questions too.
Will do.
Briefly, I actually almost dropped out of school to become a scuba instructor at one point. I stayed in, became a dentist. My dad's a dentist.
Okay. So is mine.
And then...
is he a general or is he an oral surgeon too?
He's a general dentist.
Okay.
And then in my senior year, I went to do oral surgery rotation. I fell in love with it. Came home, told my wife. She cried for a month. and then here I am.
So how...
100 years later.
How old were... That was the medium version? That's what I get? I would have hated to see it was a short version. Shit! Okay, we're going to have to work on this. Well, what did you like about it? Because I feel like a lot of people are like, oh, well, I want to be an oral surgeon, but what have they done? You know, what have you done to like really figure that out? Or I want to be an orthodontist. Like, you know, it's like the kids who come in day one and they're like, I want to be an orthodontist, you know? But they haven't even like seen a bracket and wire. So, and Alec, you could touch base on that, this question too, because I think it's interesting on how, and because Holsinger's got an interesting story because he, you know, went and did general dentistry for 4 years or 3 years, or I don't know, you're pretty old too. So, and then went back to residency. So y'all talk a little bit about that, because I think
I also practiced general dentistry before I went back to do residency.
You did?
Nice. Okay. Join the club. I like it.
So, okay. So, yeah. So I want to hear about that. That to me is interesting.
We're piecing the story together here. It's all
coming together. You're going to get that medium version out.
Good thing we have an hour ride to talk
about. Good thing the story ends with all of us on your boat. So we've been on the lake all day.
I'm a big fan of the one word answers.
Yeah. Okay. We need a couple beers. This is the problem. We're still coming down.
So, I don't know how to describe it. I would just say this, that when I used to joke that my first year in residency, it was a good thing that I wore a mask because I just walked around with my mouth open all the time because everything was so awesome.
Yeah.
That's awesome. One time I actually said, that's awesome, when I was looking at a radiograph and the patient was like, excuse me? I'm like, I'm sorry. I realized I was insensitive. Because it was
think I've probably done that in like private practice a couple times. Like, wow, yeah.
Wow,
that is cool. An impressive lesion.
Yeah, I have like a 3-year-old come in with like a fused tooth on the lower, and I'm just going, like, this is great. And the mom's like, what do you mean? Like, I don't understand this. Yeah.
Okay, so you said you went and did general dentistry though. So you felt like you fell in love with it, but then you went and practiced general dentistry.
Well, because I was a senior. And it was really kind of past. It was Christmas time. It was past the time to apply. And I went and worked with my dad for a year. I don't think he's listening to this podcast, so he's definitely not a millennial.
So you did, and that whole year, were you kind of just like, you knew you were doing oral surgery that year?
I was pretty sure. You know, I was applying, and I wanted to do it. I probably could have been convinced to stay, but to be honest, my dad's practice is in Texarkana, Texas, and I don't know if you've ever been there.
Oh, yeah, I've been there.
It's not for me.
Yeah.
And so since I wanted to do oral surgery anyways, and I didn't want to live in Texarkana, the only appeal to stay was my dad, and Texarkana wasn't strong enough.
Sure. No, I hear you on that. All right, quick pit stop. We had to stop by Willie's house. Great, nice house, nice neighborhood. Seems like you have a nice wife.
seems like a nice wife.
Attractive woman. Yeah.
Oh, you got your t-shirt?
Get your t-shirt. we're back. So this is the problem with roadcasting is there's things that come up and we have to stop.
Yeah.
New hurdles to jump over. That's correct.
And we also just learned about Willie that he likes to order t-shirts off the internet.
Well, in the recap episode of the episode so far, Willie's older.
Ish.
That's basically what I'm gathering. Okay, so I do want to get back to the... So during that year, what you were off, did you do a lot of oral surgery type stuff in the practice? Or did you start trying to kind of learn things? Or did you just do general dentistry? Or how was that? Tell me about that year.
It was just dentistry. You know, I say this all the time to people that... my 1 year in general dentistry, I was more tired than any year in oral surgery. Not that oral surgery is not hard. General dentistry is really hard. The constant bouncing around and the hygienist going, check my patient. Yeah. It wore me out.
Yeah, it wears me out. We have four. And when dad's not in the office, it's miserable checking four hygienists. Holsinger, how many hygienists do you have?
We run like 5 columns of hygiene usually.
Yeah, wow.
And we just had it.
And
they're
probably 20-minute appointments though, or something.
Oh, they're 30 minutes.
30, yeah.
So, I mean, yeah, it's a lot.
Yeah, we run about 100 patients through the orthodontic practice a day too.
So
a lot of bouncing around, but there's 2 doctors in our office, so on days when we're both in the office together, it gets pretty busy. I mean, we can see upwards of 120 with 2 doctors in the office, or if it's solo doctor day, I mean, it's you're stressed out if you're running 80 around the office.
So what would y'all say would be, I guess I kind of want to take this in a way of to dentists looking into specialties or trying to figure out what they want to do. You know, Alec, you went right into this right afterwards.
I did, yeah.
And
he must have had better grades than me.
Me too, yeah.
Probably took me
3 years to get in. Yeah.
So, quick fact, I went to residency at Baylor, where Willie did his dental school. So, you know, we got a little Baylor connection there.
But then you went to Southern Illinois for dental school? Right?
Yeah, I went to. So, I'm from Illinois. I went to University of Illinois undergrad, went to Southern Illinois for dental school, and which is right outside of St. Louis. So, all of our patients came from St. Louis. We had a clinic in East St. Louis, so big Medicaid clinic there.
Do you want to hear a fun fact about Texas?
Yes.
Let's hear it.
Outside of California, Illinois is the number 2 state of people moving to Texas from Illinois.
Yeah. Oh, there you go. So I did it. Made the move. Went down to Dallas for 3 years, but I'm in Nashville now with Dr. Sully and Dr. Holsinger here.
That's interesting. Did y'all... If y'all could do it again, would y'all have gone directly into residency?
Yes, I would.
I would not. I'm glad I did general for a while.
I would say also glad I did general. I think it gives me a different perspective.
Yeah, I'm working with general dentists and as a specialist, it just kind of helps with that perspective of how to communicate and what the needs are for those patients. And just I think it was good. And I didn't know what I wanted to do. I didn't like I didn't come out of school going like, I want to do pediatric dentistry, or I want to be an orthodontist, or I want to go oral surgery or endo or anything. I knew I didn't want to do perio. I knew that much, but that was about it. So I'm glad I did it for a couple of years.
Willie, how many are you the only one in your office, or you have multiple partners?
Oh, I have a partner, Steve Widener.
How is how does that work? How do y'all kind of operate?
Well, we're stretched a little thin. We have three practices and two doctors, kind of the reverse of what you should have, which is one more doctor than you have buildings.
Yeah.
But I drive a lot, but it's okay. I have a Jeep and it gets terrible gas mileage.
Are you, when you came out of oral surgery school, did you buy something? I mean, Alec has gone to an associateship, Helsinger's an associateship. You know, I think, let's talk a little bit about the transition to ownership.
I actually got into Austin and I took a job with I was supposed to go up to Dallas and that fell through. So we came to Austin. And I took a job with a big chain as their oral surgeon, and I hated it. And so I started opening up my own practice, which is where I work most
just
of the
time.
Just a scratch start.
Wow, what year was this?
2010, I started to build out. 2011, we opened.
Okay.
And then after that, you know, at the time, money was not being given freely by the banks. And so you had to have a job outside of your own practice in order to get a loan from the bank. And I was working part-time for my now partner. So after I opened my practice, after about 2 years, we just merged all the practices together as partners.
Huh. So he had already had two?
He had two.
And you both, and then we merged them in. Gotcha. And then as far as...
I had big eyes.
What was the hardest part about doing that?
Well, I think anyone with a partner will tell you that the hardest part about a partnership is having a partner. There's a lot of great things about it, and I think it was the right decision. But, you know, you have to have learn how to have two strong personalities be around each other.
We're struggling with that a little bit in our office to a degree, some because
you're new
to
have.
Yeah, which again sounds funny, but we've. Because I early on, I was a really big, really big believer in that, like, okay, there should be more partnerships in dentistry. Like, the partnerships are and I think partnerships are really good for patients, for transitioning patients, for lowering overhead. I think there's a lot of good reasons. But what's hard is how, especially in our situation, is you have where it's such a different age gap. Because even though I'm 50% partner, you know, to the team and staff, he's still the major boss. Does that make sense?
Absolutely.
And so it can be tricky a lot of times on like, you know, and not in his, he's not malicely trying to like not back me up or not do something, but just, you know, the lack of doing something sometimes that can be an issue. And so that's something we're wading through because you realize that it's hard to have such a 50-50 partnership kind of role, or I guess without having somebody be like a majority or
Alec, how do y'all do it? Are you partnering?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so I'm partnering. So we had the contract signed for a partnership, but it just there's a 2-year associateship leading into the partnership, but it's all signed for 50% partner. So I'm excited about that. But it's been great. It's a little different from the orthodontic world because we are seeing so many patients and you have to have really good communications on your notes and treatment plans. And because every patient, when you're sitting down, it's a quick appointment. So you got to know exactly what happened the last appointment, what you're doing at that appointment, and then what you're recommending for the following appointment. So
how do you do that? Are you writing your notes? Is your team writing the notes? Do they have templates?
So the team writes the notes, but we dictate what to write. So I say exactly every time I sit down with the patient, I look at the notes from the previous visit. I look at the notes, what was planned for today's visit, and then I can make a decision. Yes, I want to do that today, or no, I want to reroute. We're going to go with this appointment today. And then I say what I want to do at the following visit. And I do a detailed note like, hey, I want to reposition the like tooth number 6. I want to reposition the bracket more gingival to extrude that canine. So
Alec, it kind of sounds like you do your notes the same way I do. Well, the assistants kind of act like a scribe, basically.
Yes.
When you're in the appointment, you're kind of dictating what's going on, and then they're transcribing it into the note.
Yes,
template,
exactly. You
know? And then do y'all come back and check them to make sure that like they're... Because I feel like that's what we do, but like we do a crappy job of it. So,
right.
I feel like that I'll like say these things, and then I'll come back and it'll be like prepped for crown seated.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah. Was, yeah. Yeah. That was the note. Hey,
yeah. Short and sweet.
Right. Like, really?
kind of like my story about how I became a dentist.
Yeah. Short and sweet. And it's annoying because I get back and I'm like, dadgummit, like, you know, at least put like the cement we used or something. Or yeah. What kind of crown it was, the shade maybe.
Are you talking about your dad's notes?
No, I'm talking, well, what I'm talking about.
Because my dad had the same thing.
Yeah. it's like a freaking, and I guess too, it's
not concerned about being sued.
Well, I think part of it though, and you joke about that, but I do think part of it was we are more aware, I think, of the litigating world that we're moving in towards, yes, where everybody's so quick to sue, mm-hmm, now. And so, whereas their generation, it was kind of like if you treated people right and did the right thing, that really was never a big issue, you know?
I mean, right.
Unless you just did something crazy.
Oh, yeah. And it definitely does. It coming straight out of residency. In residency, you're writing novels for your notes. But also in residency, I'm seeing about 10 to 15 patients a day. Now you come into the real world and you're seeing 100 a day. You can't write those same novel notes coming straight out that you had in residency. So it is a little bit different. But I make sure that when if it's something that I'm talking to a patient about, or like a mom or a dad, that is something serious, then I make sure that I write that note. Or actually, this is kind of a tip too. I have a dictation, like a recorder. Yeah, I have a recorder, yeah, in the office. So if I need to send a note to like their general dentist about, you know, I found some caries on tooth number 30, buccal pit, then I'll have my recorder and I'll say letter to Dr. Sully Sullivan and buccal pit, tooth number 30.
Hey, buccal pit that.
There we go. So we should do my own buccal pits. Sully loves when I send him buccal pits.
Yeah. You asshole, do the buccal pit. Get you a composite and put it in there.
That's how you lose referrals real fast, send buccal pits.
Except
out.
Except for me. I refer my buccal pits to my orthodontist. Oh, man.
But yeah, I have like a little recorder. And so, because when you're in a crazy busy day, I might send, you know, 15 notes out a day. So I'll have a recorder, and just at the end of the day, you just pop the USB card out and I'll give it to one of my assistants, and they'll actually dictate notes based on what I said on the recorder. And then I'll send notes to all these dentists. They email them to me, so I proof every note that we send, and then I change it based on what I want, and then we email them out.
Have you ever tried Dragon?
No.
So Dragon is like a talk to a text, and you talk into it and it texts it, so you put your notes. It basically transcribes it while you're talking.
Is this on your phone or on the computer? You just download it for like anything?
Yeah, I mean, wherever you put the cursor, if you've got Dragon running, it'll just insert the text.
Oh, and then, so where's the mic hooked up to? What do you...
It's a little... by the way, I don't actually have Dragon. I was just curious.
You just did. You've seen it. to clarify.
My notes, my notes are set up like templates, so they can just put whole blocks of text in every time.
My dragon is named Susan, and she listens to my recordings.
My dragon.
And she Susan, dictates if you're out there listening, I record.
Sorry.
Yeah. Yeah, I apologize, Susan. She's,
I don't
awesome.
Know, though. Susan's kind of like referred to being a compliment. Like, oh, yeah. Susan's my dragon.
No, so Susan, like, she is awesome.
That means awesome sorcerer or something?
Susan's basically responsible for me actually working at this practice, so she is awesome. I owe her everything. But, yeah, we can get into that in another podcast and how I kind of limped into a partnership here, but it's kind of a lucky draw.
did your boss, Alec, was he pretty good about all that sort of thing? And before, I could see where he was probably pretty organized when it came to that sort of stuff and had a good stuff in place.
Oh yeah, he was very organized. So I mean, I can give you a little brief detail. So I showed up at his office one day. I was in residency down in Dallas. I knew I wanted to be in the Nashville area. So I basically did a Google search of orthodontist around Nashville, and I kind of knew who the top few were. And I was actually in town interviewing with a different orthodontist, but I knew that I wanted to be with this other guy across town. So I just showed up in his office on a cold call one day. I knew I was only in town for 2 days, so I popped in purposely right before lunch hour, knowing that he might have a little bit of time to at least shake my hand and introduce myself. You know, and he said, you know, thanks for coming by. I'm not looking for anybody. Yeah, so I dropped a resume off, and he called me back the next day and said, you know what, maybe it is time to start thinking about taking on a partner. But it was actually Susan, the treatment coordinator, that I was kind of waiting in the new patient room for the senior doctor to come just say, hey. And I talked to Susan for probably 10 minutes, and she's the one that actually convinced the doctor to think about taking on a partner. So,
and that's a good point, though. Well, you kind of mentioned is I think a lot of new graduates are like, how do I find jobs? How do I do stuff? They're, you know, then, and the reality is they aren't usually looking, you know, they kind of don't know they're ready for a partner. And so that kind of goes to that test, it's cold call, you know.
I think it's a great idea just to send resumes to offices and say, hey, you know,
I'm out here.
Right.
You looking for somebody? Here's my stats.
Yep.
Check it out.
So talking
check my CV. Yeah.
So the guy I ended up going in with, he said that he got at least 4 resumes on his desk every single week. And so he never really took them seriously.
That's that bad idea. Yeah.
And we're live back on the Millennial Dentist Podcast Road Edition, Austin, Texas, with the crew.
Generation Xers in the car.
We have
missing the microphone.
Dr. Jeff Ricks, oral surgeon extraordinaire. Jeff, say hi.
Hello.
Dr. Jeff Alford, aka Willie, back on the podcast, becoming a routine favorite. And a new guest, Clay.
Yes.
Introduce yourself.
Clay Lee.
And so this trip is 8 dentists and 1 attorney.
That is accurate, yes.
So what do you do?
I am an assistant United States attorney. It should be noted for the record that my views expressed do not reflect the official policies of the Department of Justice in any way or form.
I want it noted that my views do not also express. Yeah,
what about the previous podcast episode? Do I need to go back and add that for you, Willie? That your views don't represent the oral surgeons at large?
I don't speak for all of them.
Well, since when we have an attorney,
some of them.
We got an hour drive back home from Topgolf. And while we have an attorney with us, a federal, what are you, a prosecutor?
I'm a federal prosecutor.
Federal prosecutor. While we have a federal prosecutor with us, we kind of wanted to talk about the how that relates to dentistry and some of the issues with narcotics. I want to ask some questions about, y'all are distracting me, some of the questions about just, you know, lawsuits, legality, consent, that sort of thing. So, Dr. Riggs, you were the one that kind of prompted this discussion. Why don't you kind of kick it off for us?
My concern is just that I do surgery. Every patient I see, it's a surgery, and they have pain, so I prescribe narcotics, and they're heavily abused in the state I practice in, and I get a lot of patients requesting more, and there is a need for them, but only to a certain extent. After I've, you know, examined them and see, well, this doesn't require an opioid to treat your discomfort, that's one. You know, way to figure that out and not prescribe it. But if they do continually need something for a bigger surgery or continued pain or what have you, I'm concerned about the level of narcotics I am prescribing.
Can we get some AC?
So to address your concern, I'm
and like prescription. That's it. Honestly, sorry, I was getting the highway.
So I do criminal prosecutions.
I don't do anything that you're talking about.
Well, no. So frequently, where we do see the opioids being abused come from the pill mills. You know, people who are not practicing, well, certainly dentistry. And I think there are legitimate pain clinics out there, but by and large, a lot of these are pretty suspect. You notice them when you drive up to them. You know, often they'll have like plywood signs. You'll see van loads of people unloading to
get
go into
here.
Them. Yeah. We don't run into it with legitimate dental practices or medical practices.
Let me ask you this. This is a better question. Once in a while, I don't even know what it's called, but it's a printout of a patient's medical prescription history.
You know, that's now a requirement in Texas. They just passed Senate Bill 313.
Yeah.
That anybody that's prescribing any narcotics has to legally, well, for dentists, have to legally pull every patient's narcotics prescription history.
I do pull every patient.
That was my question.
It's behind. I pull it every patient. And it's behind by 30 to 60 days.
You're way ahead of the game here in Texas.
It's huge. In Tennessee, it's a nightmare for those narcotics, straight.
Yeah, from the legal side,
I'm sorry, before I lose this stinking thought, it's I'll get something, and it's, of course, I've given a patient prescription for 20 Percocet for a surgery, and I get a new printout that has my name on it, and in the 60 days I wasn't aware of, 4 of the prescribers gave her 100 pills, and I'm attached to that list, like I didn't pay attention. I did pay attention, and I'm just behind 60 days in the information, so someone looks at me like, why are you prescribing Percocet when someone just got a prescription for 120?
Well, I think another thing to keep in mind, like particularly in my world, Percocets are nothing, right? I mean, that's that's not a... Okay. It is a real drug.
Like, see, that's funny because I was actually going to make a comment like, why the need for Percocet, which is interesting.
Because the number one... And this is unfortunate that I'm about to say this.
This is good that we have two oral surgeons.
One of the number one complaints and reasons why people get is because they fail to control pain. And in fact, in a hospital, the way that it's now adjusted, they use pain as a qualifier for patient satisfaction while they're in the hospital. So if they rate the physician low enough because they don't feel like the physician controlled their pain adequately, the physician makes less money from the hospital. Wow. So the system is driving the problem. Up the fact that we need to prescribe more pain medication. And I'll go one more further that, you know, in Texas now, and maybe everywhere, I think, it's national. Hydrocodone is now a Schedule 2 instead of a Schedule 3. And the intent was to keep it off of the streets. But I think, personally, it's having the reverse effect in that because I can't just readily take care of my patient's pain now over the phone, I have to clarify that
over the phone is the key there. You can't call prescription anymore.
I can't just call them in.
Codeine's the only thing we can call in anymore.
So if I feel like I need to control their pain, I have to over-prescribe from the beginning because I don't have the ability to refill it without being in person with that person.
I agree with that. I over-prescribe with the narcotic I use and also the number so that there is, if they exceed that or they have more pain, I'm absolutely not vindicated, but just I'm okay with saying, there's something else going on. I need to see you. Come to the office. And if they don't come in, then oh, that's a good answer or not, but it's like, it must have not been that bad.
So I kind of want to take this, step this back a little bit and ask you two from just kind of a specialist opinion. What procedures are you doing or do you feel like one that are, what cases are you wanting to prescribe narcotics versus trying to do something more of like a, you know, an ibuprofen, you know, so Tylenol
that's
regimen.
Not a.
I think it's every single procedure.
Every single procedure.
And I would say this: that I tell my patients, look, you need to take ibuprofen. Ibuprofen should be your primary pain reliever, as long as they can take ibuprofen, of course. And as long as it is ibuprofen, if you're taking it regularly, you will use a lot less of the narcotic. But here's the narcotic because just in case you're having pain.
So even for like a single implant placement.
You're going to get hydrocodone.
Every single patient I treat gets 20 ibuprofen with a refill, no matter what. The narcotics.
Ibuprofen?
20 with a refill.
An ibuprofen?
800 milligrams.
Why don't they just take the oral pills?
I tell them the same thing.
It's
at the
CVS, it's in a bottle. It says
no, but
people have prescription cards. I'm just saying.
They like the idea, too, that it's like prescribed. Like that makes them feel better.
No, it's just a prescription. But anyway, they all get that because it's a great drug, but the narcotic varies from implant to, you know, 10 pills to third molars, 20 pills. And they're 5 to 25 Percocets. But yeah, and it's also with the marketing that Purdue Pharma does and all that shit, man, every fucking patient wants narcotics. They're like, why am I not getting a pain prescription? It's like, why? I was like, you did. You got ibuprofen. That's not a pain medicine.
So I've really tried to move.
And also, in the note of referrals,
Jeff wasn't done talking.
They go back to their to Dr. Sally Sullivan and say, that old surgeon, he didn't give me any pain medicine. It doesn't matter if they need it or not, but your patient had a bad experience because they didn't get the drug they wanted.
Yeah, it's hard. I don't know how much. I think your
practice is unique in that regard.
Well, but I think that's a poor job on the general dentist if they're. Look, I mean, I think we have a better working.
You could approach it from a practical sense or from a realistic sense.
Well, but I think that's true. I think reality is more important from how we, because the reality is how we're actually doing procedures. But what I think, and part of it is too, yeah, because I'm going to see the patients over and over and over again is what I tend to see is, and I think a big problem with the drug issue is that when we prescribe something, like say they get 20 hydrocodones for an implant placement. They may take 4. Well, now they have, you know, 16 that they're just keeping on their shelf that they're going to give to their family members or their cousin or their daughter or whatever when something happens. And so you get this like buildup of medication that is being used that way. Does that make sense?
I think yeah. Sully presents an excellent perspective from where we see it. And that is where people get hooked on drugs, right? Is that some family member had 40 hydros sitting on the shelf mm-hmm. and they tried one or two of them. And then the street value on that stuff right now is $1 per milligram on hydros. And you start talking about oxys or roxys, you're looking at $1.25 to $1.50.
What's a roxy?
I know. Rapid release Oxycontin.
Wow.
Where you're paying $125 to $150 per milligram on that stuff, which is an incredible, you know, value to sell. And then also you start using a few. And then you move on to heroin, which is the really fun stuff.
Well, the way I prescribe is 20 pills is 5 days. Every 6 hours, 4 pills a day. That's 5 days. And that's how I think about it. It's either it's 20, 16, 12, 8. It's like, how many days do you need this medication?
But are you doing that? Are you doing that for the say for one implant, the same thing for that versus 5 implants and full mouth extractions? Or
it's case by case. It's not a cookbook. So I don't prescribe 20 every time. It's absolutely, like I said, if it's single extraction, you get 2 days. If it's, you know, expected swelling in 3 days from third molar extraction, you get 5 days. You treat the surgery. Am I going straight?
What are y'all's thoughts on what dad's always done is instead of for like third molars and whatnot, he tends to do more Demerol and Phenergan than hydrocodone.
Meprigan was very popular with your dad's age. I don't disagree with it, but it's just the combo makes them sleepy enough that they don't really have to be awakened. But I get it. But Jeff was right in what he said. It's hard for us once we get behind the pain to get back ahead of it. It's hard. Like, they've already reached this pinnacle of pain, and you can give them, you know, 4 times what you would give them normally to try to get ahead of the hurt. But if you give them a single dose of something, it just keeps them comfortable till they heal.
And that's why it's more important for me. I give more, but I also, I give counseling. I don't say, hey, here's narcotics abuse. I say, look, I teach them ways that they can minimize the use. And then I say, and when you're done with these, if you have extra, take them back to the pharmacy, because the pharmacy will dispose of them for you.
If we're talking reality, though, that's okay, not happening.
But I feel like I'm doing my part. I have competing interests.
Well,
on one hand, I have to take care of the patient.
I totally get the reality of, like, you want them to go back and have a good experience. They report to the general dentist, because they're going to report to the general dentist. The general dentist's team is going to hear that. The staff's going to hear that. You don't want to be the guy that's like, oh, they didn't give me enough pain pills. I was hurting for 2 weeks. This has been a miserable experience.
I don't agree with that. I brought that up, but I don't agree with that. I think we're covering our ass. Not covering our ass. We're taking care of the patient, but also from perspective of the blame that gets thrust upon us is amazing for a patient who ended up in the ER because they hurt or thought they had an infection or did something wrong, and our liability insurance reflects that. So he's not doing it for referrals. He's doing it because we've been fucking sued so many times as a specialty that we have to cover everything. It sounds so stupid that we have to talk about it. Like, take these pills with food or you throw up.
Jeff is the
cusser
after hours blogger.
He seems a little salty.
Yeah. I don't know. He's like, Greg,
this is the millennial dentist after hours version.
No, that's kind of the normal
after hours version.
It's actually the normal version.
No, I'm not salty. I've been accused of that. Like, I'm always angry. That's how I talk.
Well, I get that, though. I forget what I was saying.
We're just talking about the way we deal with patients. And I do the same thing as Jeff. And there's one patient population specifically, like, I spend a lot of time with, and they're patients that have migraines. There's something called a migraine rebound headache, and it's heavy with post-narcotic use. I'm like, you don't need these.
Hey, put your mic down. You're not supposed to be on a cell phone. I'm almost certain you're not supposed to be blogging or...
You gave me a hard time. I hit the brakes. I saw the...
No, I know. Good job. Kudos. And then I supported you by saying put the mic down because you can't text and talk or talk on the phone.
Oh, is that right?
You can't certainly do a podcast while you're driving. It's frowned upon.
But my thing though with all this is those, like, if we're prescribing 20 to 30 pills for somebody and they're using 5 of those or 10 of those, then that's where there's this big influx of pills sitting in bathrooms.
Yeah. And it's a hard thing. It's like you can't.
Okay, so.
How do we fix that?
Let's use an example. Let's say I take out a set of third molars, right?
And
I
want to
be
judicious.
What's
your normal prescription?
That's right, yeah.
I want to
be judicious. Let's be real here.
I want to be judicious, and I say, I'm only going to give you 16 hydrocodones, right? Then they're out of pain, and it's Friday night, and it's 6 p.m., and they call me up, and they say, hey, I'm out of pain pills. Oh, well, I'm at home now. I need to go back to the office to write you this prescription. how many times am I expected to drive? I know what I'm saying is sounds selfish, but how many times realistically am I expected to go back to the office to write a new prescription? Why don't I just cover it and then hope that they do the right thing?
Are you, that may be another tangent, but are you prescribing antibiotic too with that, or are you just doing just?
I prescribe antibiotics for my third molars.
So absolutely. You're prescribing antibiotic, but Jeff's shaking his going, what? You don't?
No,
why?
Because it's unfortunate that
you're treating the patient or the mom.
No.
Well, no, that's true though, because the reality is like if I don't prescribe that and something happens, then I'm asked why didn't I prescribe that?
No, I get what Jeff does. I'm getting a hard time. I get it. I get the what we deal with, but I mean I'll have 30-minute conversations with parents of why I'm not giving you an antibiotic. I was like, so when your kid's actually sick, it works. You don't need it. But I get it. I mean,
I'm doing it too, Jeff. So.
And do you want to be the
crusader or the realist?
The problem is that I'm kind of a crusader because I was a drug rep for 2 years and I see that industry and see what it does. That's my background.
Clay, what is the legal? Now you've listened to this conversation. You clearly see that we are torn from a standpoint of like, okay, what do we do what is literature backup versus what do we feel the reality is? And like you see where you're kind of seeing the inside scoop of where we're being pulled from a legality standpoint. How do we work with that?
Well, I think all three of you, your head is in the right place because you're concerned about this, but I think really from the other perspective is that
shut up, Billy. I'm trying to listen to him.
None of you are going to be in this scenario where you're accused of overly prescribing a series of narcotic prescriptions to patients. And I think the reality from that is like
you don't think so, somebody yet? You has think to we're pay in trouble you. With that overprescribing?
Somebody has to pay you a significant amount of money every time they come to see you.
I don't think that is a bit of a
gate holder.
Because 20 pills is nothing.
So that's what you're saying. If they're coming to see me for a recheck and I'm charging them as I get their prescription, that's a problem.
Well, no,
I agree with that. It should be a problem.
Like it serves as a deterrent value. Like, and that's what the pain clinics don't have is, right? It's a $10 walk in the door. We'll see you and prescribe you what you need. For you, there's how much is the minimum charge anybody's going to have to come walk through your door?
I'm not going to prescribe somebody pain pills probably unless they're a patient tracker or I'm doing something.
Right.
So. I don't have a consult fee. I have a surgical fee. I don't have a recheck fee.
I have a post-op fee, though.
Right. Yeah. And generally, you will have had to have done something to these people for them to be asking.
I'm
right?
explaining to the federal prosecutor that I don't want to take care of my patients.
I think you should be suspicious anytime somebody comes in and tells you what pain pills they want. And then if they're going ahead and giving you this reasoning about, well, I don't...
It's a wide lane.
I want more because if I get to hurting more on Saturday... and I can't come in and see you, it tells me that they've already gone through this with another doctor and they know the same mentality that you're
kind of like the patient that walks in and tells you the prescription for pain meds they want.
It's not, yeah, those patients are not sly. Those are easy. The patients that come in and say, I'm allergic to Ultram and ibuprofen.
Hydro doesn't seem to work on me. I need something stronger.
And Hydro 5s. Those Percocet 10s work pretty well though. And it's, you know, and what Jeff said about going in, I get it. And you got to be, it's hard to be selfish. I go in, I go see him. I always go in. And it's just because
I don't see them.
No, I get it.
I know that I don't need to see them because they're having some persistent pain. There is absolutely nothing I'm going to do there that's going to make that any better.
Other than pat on them back and encourage them a little bit.
And I can do that on the phone.
Yeah.
But what I can't do is take care of their pain on the phone. I don't physically need to see them 3 days after surgery unless they have symptoms of an infection.
So are you promoting hydrocodones as schedule 3 again so we can call it in? Or are you promoting that they stop being little bitches?
I'm saying that the intent of the law...
it doesn't have to be one or the other.
You're right. A bit of both.
I feel better about going in because... nine times out of 10, honestly, and I say, meet me at the office. I'll check it out. They're like, well, I'll be fine till Monday. They just want the medicine and think it'll be easier. And who can complain about me wanting to see them and take care of my patient? Who could complain? They'll complain heavily to whoever will listen that I wouldn't see them and I wouldn't give them medicine. But they, if they go back to your referral, even if that, you know, matters, they go back and say, well, he came in and saw me on Saturday, but he didn't give me medicine. They're like, who can argue with saying, well, obviously there's nothing wrong or to give you something. And it makes me feel better. I sleep better. I'm like, oh, did they have something? Was the swelling because of
you know, subperiosteal, or, you know, I just like seeing them.
I'm trying to have a population. I haven't been even
like in the way of numbers though.
For instance, single implant site and a grafted site where I'm not even prescribing narcotics anymore. I'm really just doing ibuprofen and Tylenol and having them do it on a regimen basis and not having, because what I'm getting, the feedback that I'm getting from patients is they're like, okay, well, this is not that traumatic of an experience. This is soft tissue soreness. And so what's going to happen is if I prescribe them 16 hydros, that
what's your take on the new like CBD type non-narcotic pain relieving medicines? You know what I'm talking about?
I have no clue what you're talking about.
I don't know about. I don't know enough about them, but they're basically cannabinoid.
Oh yeah, yeah, yeah.
Derived pain medication, but they take the high out of it.
Huh?
And they use it for pain.
The only cannabinoid thing I know is anti-nausea.
The only thing that works for his pain. He doesn't get it. He doesn't get high from it.
He doesn't get high. Sorry.
So basically, it's like weed, but without the high.
Yeah,
that's interesting. Well, I think we're gonna have the next, you know, 10 years as it continues to become legal in other states, the way that sort of medication is used is going to be really interesting.
I would also like to say though that I personally I think narcotics are disgusting.
I thought you were gonna say no. I personally smoke weed.
No, so. I think narcotics are gross. I hate using them. I hate being reliant upon them. Mm-hmm. And I try to give my patients every way to not use them. However, at this point in our careers, they're a necessary evil.
You and I are at the age that when you get your thirds taken out, what did you get? I got Tylenol 3.
I got hydrocodone. I had it taken out in dental school.
Oh, I was
Dr.
I was
Franco 18. Took care of me.
My general dentist in Bellbuckle, Tennessee took it out, and I got Meprigan.
Did you get Meprigan? See, same thing. I got Tylenol 3.
And then I got
which, you know, and that's, I think, why Dad hasn't changed is because, like, we get, you know, you don't have post, like, I kind of have joked to them, I think, like, is this a little overkill? This, you know, but we don't get post-op calls of pain usually, you know, so it's kind of like, well, that looks good for you, the patient's taken care of, and, you know, you have a low. It, to me, I think it's almost more the adults, you know, not...
You treat parents.
Exactly, right? Because then you're like, okay, well, you know, even if it's wisdom teeth on a 16-year-old, well, the parents are in charge of the medication, right? They're the ones that are filling the scripts and keeping the meds safe or keeping the meds in their...
Well, Jeff and I probably have a good example of that, of treating parents, is that there's something that was in the hospital we prescribe after surgeries. It's called PCA. It's pain control anesthesia or... analgesia. It's a button. Like you see on TV, push a button.
Yeah, yeah.
You have parents sit bedside whether daughter or son is sleeping.
Oh my God.
And push the button for them.
Wow.
Like they looked uncomfortable. Like they're asleep.
Oh, I tell them not to.
Stop pushing the button.
I actually say, do not push this button.
Clay, do you think there's an issue with that? Is that an issue where you have like us prescribing medications to, like at what point do we have to start checking the parents' backgrounds for narcotics when we're prescribing them
half
for
of my
kids.
Patients I check their parents.
Well, no, I was gonna say, do you do that? That's interesting.
I think that's a valid concern.
I pull it. If someone, I had a patient I took her thirds out on, I don't know, last week, but like a year ago, I took out her first premolars, which are just erupted. No big deal. And it was her grandmother's or caregiver. Grandmother's a caregiver, and she called in several times.
Which doesn't need any probably narcotics, you know.
None. She didn't get any. She didn't get any. And I said, well, bring her in. Something's going on. And so we pulled, you know, grandma's record, and she's, you know, getting hit every 15 days for 120 oxycodone.
Wow.
Let me ask you this. So you can pull anybody's record. They don't have to be a patient. You can pull anyone. Yep.
You can. I mean, I can do anything in that regard. I have to have a reason for it, though.
Are you using Lexicon?
People get fired for checking in because, you know, Shaq got in the middle of the hospital. We'll get fired if we don't have a reason.
Yeah, you can't go check your girlfriend just because you want to know, right?
Exactly. Okay, but if I'm concerned about a patient, patient care.
Well, I can check anybody's record, but once. I have to account
you
for
do it.
It
once.
I just said that.
You can do it once, right. You have to account for it.
Yeah.
It's the same way with legal records in my job. You can do it once.
That
probably
one
the last time you'll do it.
But that's
is that also
that.
Frowned upon?
Well, a little bit more than that. It's fired upon.
It's fired upon. Especially when you're working with the justice system.
They're very sensitive about those things. I don't get it.
It's so particular. Yeah, I look at parents. Because the kids will come in and they're just like, I feel fine. And then all of a sudden, an hour later, the car ride home, they start hurting and they want some medicine. I'm like, what?
Thank you for listening to The Millennial Dentist. Visit us online at millennialdentist.com.